You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the modern format. Each week, we go deep on designing spicy new decks geared at tournament play. We put our creations to the test in competitive leagues and share our findings on the air. If you would like to support Faithless Brewing, please give us your feedback to help us grow and improve the show. You can find us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG or on the Modern subreddit at r/ModernMagic. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to episode 5 of Faithless Brewing. I am David Robertson, joined as always by Damon Alexander. Damon, how's it going?
Pretty good. How about you?
Can't complain. A little late in the Central Standard Time Zone, but I'm maintaining. With us also is Dan Schrieper. He's Cave Dan Online. Dan, what's up?
How's it going, guys?
Good. I just won my playoffs match for a Canlander tournament I'm playing, but it's not modern, so... Let's get going.
Yeah, multi-format star, Damon. My goodness.
Yeah, Canlander's a pretty fun format if you guys haven't tried it.
Actually, I have not tried it. That's the format where you have like a point system to allocate towards your Power 9 cards, something like that.
Yeah, it just kind of plays out like a combination of like a quarter, 25% Vintage, 25% Legacy, 25% EDH, 25% Cube.
Or 50% of each of those for 200% fun.
Oh, yeah.
So last week we were discussing some lists that try to make use of some of the new Planeswalkers. They are Teferi Time Raveler and Karn the Great Creator. These are cards which are showing up all over Modern, often sort of added kind of piecemeal to existing archetypes. And we thought we'd try to take the opportunity to sort of build decks that explicitly use these Planeswalkers in a game-ending combination or sort of, you know, build the entire architecture around them. So, Damon, I know you and I both kind of got through a league with the Jun Karn the Great Creator Liquid Metal Coding deck, and I think we had pretty similar results. Do you want to kind of talk about your experiences playing the list?
Yeah. So, they say every deck in Modern is a 3-2 deck, but that clearly doesn't add up mathematically. So, I took a turn being the 1-4 deck this time with Liquid Metal Jund. The deck was really interesting. The deck, even though the results were pretty bad, it had some really powerful moments to it. We had this crazy, crazy game against Amulet Titan. We fought through like 3 Titans. We talked through like 3 opposing Karns, and ultimately landed a Karn lockout. And so sometimes you just kind of get the Liquid Metal combo, Liquid Metal Coding combo going with a Karn, which can Stone Rain a land every turn by making their land an artifact, and then Karn makes it a 0/0 creature and it dies. And that can get rolling and really take over a game. But sometimes like the sideboard cards against you, like Stony Silence, will just really blow you up and ruin your day. And anytime they can answer Liquid Metal Coding, you just don't draw it. You feel like you're playing Jund, but with like worse cards. And every time they don't answer, sometimes you feel like you're playing Jund, but instead of playing the actual card Terminate, you're playing an Abrade, which functions as a Terminate. And sometimes that just isn't actually enough to win a game.
Worse cards. So you're thinking of cards like Abrade? Is this too narrow or something more specialized than that?
Well, if you think about like what a Jund deck plays, it just plays all these kind of like super flexible, a mix of like discard and creature kill, things that kill planeswalkers and kind of all over the place, just flexible answers to everything. And this deck works with, you know, Abrade is a flexible card, Colgan's Command is a flexible card, but then you're playing a bunch of like, you know, Tin Street Hooligan and Ancient Grudge. And it feels like when you have Liquid Metal Coding, Ancient Grudge puts you way above Jund in what you can do, because now you have this kind of clear 2-for-1 in a Terminate package, which kills any permanent, which is super powerful. But then, of course, if you don't have Liquid Metal Coding, then you're playing a lot of the same cards that Jund plays, and your Ancient Grudges are just worse than the cards Jund is playing.
Yeah, I mean, I just thinking that you do have your discard package here, right? You have your Inquisitions and your Thoughts to Use, and you have some of the same removal, but like where a Jund deck would have some really versatile, proactive stuff like a Tarmogoyf, a Confidant, and a Liliana the Veil, that's the slots that you've given over to this artifact engine. So, I mean, is that kind of, you're feeling the difference in like just not having a more all-purpose, you know, creature that will take care of itself, knows how to handle its business in a match? Instead, you have like a more fidgety piece that requires a coding in play.
I think for me, the problem is that you don't have a proactive enough game plan. You know, you're playing a card in Liquid Metal Coating, which lets you functionally vindicate or vindicate with some slight bonus added onto it. That's great. But you don't have a way to win the game, and Karn is ostensibly your way to do that. So what happened to me was kind of similar to Damon. I did have some, you know, like he said, powerful moments, times where it feels like you're way ahead. But if you can't actually win the game in Modern, you can be way ahead for most of the game and still lose. And so you don't get to play Tarmogoyf that puts any pressure on them. I think the most power we have is 2 power for a 2 or 3 mana creature, depending on your list. I didn't play any Tinstreet Hooligans, but yeah, I felt like without a proactive way to pressure Planeswalkers, you just end up way behind on the board.
You didn't play Tinstreet Hooligan? We were like, why is this card on the list? Well, we trust Dave on this one, so we'll put one in.
Well, you know, I remember you saying, oh, it's, you know, it's tough when you didn't have liquid metal coating. So I wanted a list. I tweaked my list even more for every card to do something without liquid metal coating. So I was playing like more Dissenter's Deliverances because you can always cycle them if you don't have it. But without the other thing that I felt like the list really lacked was a way to catch up on cards. Like, okay, you blow up threat for threat, card for card. That's great. And then eventually just run out of stuff and you'll just start to flood. I try to play 2 Chandra. Torch of Defiance as a way to you know, kind of make up for cards in the late game, and that card I think is maybe just not powerful enough for Modern, at least not in this shell.
Yeah, the deck is missing some of the kind of grindy cards that a Jund deck has that can function on their own, namely like a Tracker or a Confidant style card.
Confidant is exactly the card I was thinking of. I was trying to get too cute, I think, with my main deck list, trying to like not play creatures that didn't basically 2-for-1, like, oh, like, make their removal dead. But people don't play that much removal, and we're already playing Culligan's Command anyway, so it'd almost be better if they're spending a turn, like, killing Confidant. So if you wanted to run this list, I'm not sure it's salvageable, but if you did, I would strongly recommend playing 4 Dark Confidant and getting rid of the cutesier stuff.
Damon, I got to see like a couple of your matches, and I thought the Hooligan was actually one of your best cards.
I know, that's the joke. That's the funniest part. One thing that we tried that we didn't talk about in the cast was we played 2 Faithless Lootings and then 2 Ancient Grudges. And I'm not sure what the right numbers are, possibly 0 of both, actually. But somehow the two together felt pretty good in the sense that the Lootings help you. You can discard a grudge if you don't have Liquid Metal Coating online, and then it'll always be there for you later. And then Grudge, when you have a Liquid Metal Coating out, is frequently one of your best cards to draw because you don't need to have as many grindy cards out.
Yeah, and that's maybe a sign of a list gone wrong when we don't have actually any source of persistent card advantage. So we're thinking, well, let's just throw a couple of Faithless Looting in to filter some lands away as the game drags on. That's maybe a sign that we've overlooked something in terms of what we need to make the game plan actually win.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is just that like it felt like the cards that were like the best cards in the deck were like the discard cards, the Faithless Lootings, and then like Karn. Karn is insane. I've actually played with a Karn until I tried this deck, and Karn the Great Creator just does not mess around. That guy threatens to take over a game like is so fast, it's unbelievable. Between coming down and finding a Liquid Metal Coating to start the Stone Rain plan the next turn, or coming down finding like an EE, or coming down finding a Snaring Bridge, and then if they can't kill it immediately, you untap and play like Michelson's Lattice. And the game almost ends. So that card is nuts.
Question I have for Dave then is that you were saying that you felt like you didn't have ways to win the game, but I thought that when we were theorizing the deck last week, we were imagining that Karn would be that all-in-one package, right? So did you find that you just weren't able to close it out with a Karn, or were you just never in position to do so?
When I look at my games, I think there was, you know, I had Ancient Syrinx twice when I was way ahead, and a Karn wins the game at any point there. Okay, you can say that's bad luck. The odds are that you should see it in your top 30 cards or whatever. But you also have to look at, that's a structural weakness of the deck. There's basically only 7 cards that matter. And without them, your deck either A, can't win, or B, can't interact profitably. And so I think that's an inherent weakness. That's why I think you need to play Dark Confidant. It's like another permanent they need to care about. The deck is a little clunky. There's a lot of 3s in there. Culligan's Command is a sweet card, but just making them discard is not really worth a full card. So I think Karn is great. I actually played against a bunch of other Karn decks, which is tough for this deck because Karn just passively shuts down your Liquid Metal Coating plan unless you can start blowing up lands before they get to 4. I think there's actually the risk that Karn is a problem. I've seen it now in Devoted Druid shells. Devoted Druid lets you play it on 4, or excuse me, play Karn on turn 3. And just minus Karn, the next turn you get 6 mana with your Druid, because it can tap for 2 that next turn. So I think card might be an actual problem in Modern. I kind of hate how narrow the package has to be for it to be like take over a game in exactly the way Damon's describing. You only really need two or three spots in the sideboard. I think if you go beyond, you know, some of these like seven or eight sort of wish, that's way too cute. You only really need the cards that win the game. You don't need to do any value carning. And yeah, I think you're going to see it in Amulet. I think you're going to see it in Tron. I think you're going to see it in Devoted Druid. I mean, you could see it if someone a lot smarter than me makes a better list. You could see it in a Liquid Metal Jund. I just think, yeah, I agree with Damon. That card's the real deal. As soon as you get any kind of advantage with Liquid Metal Coating, I'm literally just crying out for Karn like every turn as soon as I'm on 4 mana, because like he says, if you already have Liquid Metal Coating down, it's just amazing. It starts with so much loyalty, you don't really have to defend it for a turn. Yeah, I mean, I think this list has structural problems. I think I'd want to maybe try to run it again with 4 Dark Confidant, get rid of some of the cutesier stuff, but still try to main deck Liquid Metal Coating. I think there might still be something there. Like Damon said there, you do really feel powerful when you can start picking off for a clear 2-for-1s. But my results and Damon's results kind of make me skeptical that the inherent shell is that powerful.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I would use the specific word consistent. I think the power level actually is potentially quite high, but the deck felt a little bit weak if they can answer your Liquid Metal Coating cleanly.
Yeah, so it's possible that what we've got here is a deck where we have a really great card, the Karn, and then all he needs is a functional deck around him, and we maybe haven't delivered that. We've created a deck that still needs us to like have Karn firing all cylinders, whereas Karn doesn't actually need help. He just needs you to have like a reasonable non-Karn game plan.
Yeah, I think that might be the key. Is Karn is like kind of a stupid card, if you'll let me use that phrase. You just put 3 Karns in your list and take 3 sideboard slots. You can just win the game. It doesn't matter what else you're doing. And then the rest of your 57 cards can be one of the existing tier 1 to 1.5 to 2 decks that have a different proactive game plan. And so people are kind of used to sideboarding and attacking that in one way. And then you just get to play this, like, again, 6 to 7 card package between your main and side that lets you win the game without having to do anything.
To be fair, it kind of looks like everybody else but us has realized this a long time ago, that you take any tier 1 deck, add 4 Karns, and you have a tier, like, slightly better deck, as we've seen in all the 5-0 challenges and things like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we didn't realize it, because we've been running up against these Karn decks pretty much consistently since the set came out, but they weren't winning that often, at least in my experience.
Yeah, that's my experience, is when people play Karn against me, I'm like, this is awesome. I'm going to smoke this person. I think, except for when I'm running this Karn list, I've not lost whenever anyone's resolved a Karn, unless I was 100% going to lose to just the Ace of Spades in their hand.
So why is that? I mean, is it the case that we just happen to be playing with creature-heavy, assertive lists that just got a lot of stuff on the board quickly? I mean, I know we were playing with a good number of haste creatures last week. Is it just the case that, like, if we're moving to this Planeswalker-infested Modern, where like these 3 and 4 mana Planeswalkers are going to be everywhere, that we should just be looking at these decks that play to the board in the first few turns with creatures?
Yeah, I mean, creatures are considered to be one of the cleanest answers to Planeswalkers, except for the new Teferi, who just bounces your creature. But yeah, that's actually why I think that the Zoo list that we tried felt pretty good. It just had a bunch of cheap creatures. That's why the Dragons list felt good. It had a bunch of haste creatures. Niv-Mizzet was weird. It just kind of went over the top. The Young Wolf Neoform deck was able to kind of go wide enough to handle Planeswalkers.
Speaking of Teferi bouncing creatures, I want to give a shout out. I played the Teferi lock list. I did add red on your recommendation, guys. The 2 Jund decks I played were teched out to beat Teferi. They all brought in, I don't know exactly how many, but at least 3 Goblin Rabble Masters, which is absolutely insane against Teferi. You bounce their Tarmogoy for their Dark Confidant. You're way ahead on board. They don't play any 3-mana haste creatures, do they? Bloodbraid Elf, you know, I'm going to kill that when it comes down in 2 turns. No, they play Rabble Master, kill your Teferi, and then you can't even play Teferi into it for the rest of the game. The Rabble Master is big enough to just attack it, and Teferi minuses down to 1. So it sucked when they were doing it to me, but it was just like such an awesome example of how you get so nervous sometimes about these Planeswalkers are taking over, and the creativity of modern people to just tweak their list out. They're still playing Jund. It's still most of the same cards, and they just kind of alter their threat package. And all of a sudden, they just had this clean answer to the fairy. So, you know, thumbs up to everybody out there. I still stole a game from the Jund guy. He wasn't happy about it. But, yeah, I got absolutely curb stomped the first time. Just couldn't do anything. Just multiple of those Rabble Masters, and Teferi is pretty helpless.
Yeah, so tell us about the build that you were trying. So we have been talking about the blue-white Teferi, Icecrown, Scepter, Locke.
Yeah, so I kept basically all the same shells, the shell that we discussed. I just I replaced Void Snare, or what's the one blue on
Vapor
some
Snag.
Of it? Vapor Snag, yeah, with Lightning Bolt. And I played a couple Helix as well, just to sort of have a very reasonable extra target to put underneath the Scepter that wasn't Silence. And that proved to be pretty crucial. The lock itself was sort of hard to establish against decks that wanted to interact. And I'm speaking specifically of Jund, but I'm guessing any mid-range list playing a lot of creatures to the board. It's kind of hard to get your Teferi in play. And if it's being molested, your sort of lock is not a lock. They just eventually attack and kill Teferi. So having the red was really nice. I stole a bunch of games. You know, you just kind of keep trading, and all of a sudden you just snap, bolt, snap, or bolt, snap, bolt, and play a V-click or whatever, and all of a sudden you've just done enough damage. Teferi led to some really polarizing matchups. Like, Tron just wasn't even close. I don't think you could possibly lose that match. I mean, you just, like, counter their first 7-mana play. You don't even need Teferi game one. Just straight up Scepter plus Silence beats them. They don't play instants. Yeah, it just felt so sweet. I mean, but against Jund, it felt terrible. Like, you're never going to assemble the lock. Silence doesn't do anything. And you're going to get 2-for-1 or 3-for-1 when they call against command your Scepter. So I think going forward, and I'll send this to Dan. He'll post it on the site. I have kind of a more of a transformative sideboard package that kind of takes it moves all of your artifact Silence package away, and you just become this, like, nice kind of bigger control deck against mid-range lists. And I think then you still preserve your combo for the matchups where you're heavily favored.
I think that's a neat idea. I think we don't see that too often in Modern anymore, this transitional plan. But a card like Icecrown Scepter falls into that category of, like, it's a potentially a must-answer card with a card type that the rest of the deck mostly ignores, right?
So you either have these... John brought in, for instance, Ancient Grudge against me. They thought it was so sweet, and they died with, like, two in their hand, because after they killed the first Scepter, I was just looting them away.
So do you think it's better to have the Scepters in the main deck and then sort of hide them when the matchup calls for it? Or would you consider it something where you build the main deck without Scepter but bring in Scepters to surprise them in games 2 and 3?
I think that would need testing. My instinct right now is to at least start with it in your main deck and maybe just go to 3 Silence, 3 Scepter. We were getting a little flooded on each of those effects. But it's powerful enough against a lot of the matchups that you play, like Amulet, Titan. You just steal games from them. They can't interact with you at all. And then in game 2, they bring in all this disenchant, you know, effect, and you just get to be a control deck that doesn't care at all. So you take these linear decks, they replace, like, 6 cards that help them win for cards that don't do anything. And then you bring in, like, a bunch of counter spells and other interaction. I think there's something there. So, and you know, part of it is, you know, the first time, I really think you need to play with Wall of Omens or some other 2-drops to protect Teferi. I know the list that we showed Nassif playing had Coiling Oracle as a card that Teferi can kind of value bounce. And I think Wall of Omens, A, is a great blocker for Teferi, and B, is kind of a great card when they're not doing anything to just turn Teferi into a value engine for you. So there's just some tweaks. I mean, I'd never played with Teferi before. I think the card is super powerful. I don't think I have the perfect list yet, but I've definitely learned a lot just from the one league. So
you think this one maybe bears a little more testing then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 3-2-ing with the list in pretty rough shape against all Tier 1 decks gave me quite a bit of confidence.
How many times did you get the lock going?
Against Tron, both times. And against, it was like a Jeskai list that played the 2 and a blue enchantment that gets, like, a counter and then casts those 0 casting cost spells from your hand.
As foretold
with a red X spell that is a replicate of that. And they were playing, like, the balance effect.
Oh, living.
It wasn't living in, though. It was the restore balance.
Restore dominance, I think, is
restore
what
dominance.
That
yeah.
deck
so,
is sometimes called.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Against those decks, both times, just 2-0, 2-0, like, turn 4 or 5. They just can't do anything. You just remand there. They tap out to play. As foretold, remand, untap, GG.
Yeah, I mean, that deck specifically folds to Teferi's static ability immediately. They can no longer cast there.
No, that is not correct. As foretold, cast spells at sorcery speed. So to cast a spell at sorcery speed, just for the kids at home, You just need a clear stack and for it to be in your main phase.
Oh, sorry. I was thinking of Electro Dominance. I forgot about
it. It stops Electro Dominance, absolutely, but it does not stop As Foretold.
That's good point. Retract that statement. So, interesting results then with this list. And I myself, I did not get a chance to play with the list we discussed last week, unfortunately. We were recording a few days earlier than usual this time. But I'm really intrigued by these Teferi decks. And I know we didn't actually end up getting to test the third list that we discussed last week, which also leaned on Teferi Time Raveler in conjunction with Lavinia to maybe get a lockout there. And I had some more ideas about that deck, but I have not had a chance to put them into practice yet. So I'm going to take a personal rain check and hopefully check back, maybe next week with when I've had a chance to get some leagues in with that.
But, I thought your list had the most promise of all of them, Dan. So I will be quite interested to hear what kind of results you get. I'll probably, like I said, I have a kind of an updated list I would recommend that people run. And I think this is legit. I expect to 5-0 with this list in the next week or two for sure.
Oh, it's a bold promise.
Especially with the amount of Tron. Like, if you're sick of losing to Tron, like, this just feels so good. It's just, it's too easy.
I'm still a little skeptical that if you're playing as Tron, is to, like, land an Isochron Scepter with Silence on it before turn three and they play a O-Stone. I don't know. I'll have to see it to believe it.
Fairy bounces O-Stone, man. It's so sweet.
That's true.
Okay.
Randomly bounces artifacts.
Yeah, I don't know why. It also draws you a card while it does that.
Yeah, I think I would want to see a few matches against Tron, because it's just striking that you're describing an attack plan against them that doesn't involve attacking their mana, except in like the broadest strokes of preventing them from casting anything whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean,
that's kind of unheard of to me.
Yeah, I mean, you only have the Field of Ruin. I think normally what the game plan that White Blue has against them, right, is they remand a couple of spells and then they kind of run out of counters, but Tron is just all big mana plays. But this deck kind of has that Splinter Twin way of winning. So after you remand a couple of their plays or remand Snapcaster, remand or whatever, your next play just ends the game on the spot. And so it felt a lot like Splinter Twin back when Splinter Twin just curbed Tron. I mean, you just never would play against Tron because Splinter Twin was so good against it. This deck is obviously not as good as Splinter Twin, but it has that kind of effect where you're just upkeep, V-click, all right, there's nothing I need to take. I can beat whatever you're going to play. And yeah, it's good night, Irene. I mean,
yeah, I think that's a very apt comparison, although you do need a third piece. You need the Teferi in play to make sure they can't Nature's Claim you. So it's not as clean as a Splinter Twin, but
in game two, you do.
Yeah, in game two, yeah. Well, I think how are we feeling then? Just in general, what we learned so far is that everyone's playing with Karn, and presumably a lot of people are winning with Karn. He's showing up in the 5-0 lists, and Teferi as well. So I think these are both just going to be a part of our modern world going forward.
I think everyone's winning with Karn except for Damon and myself playing my list. So that's a type of accomplishment.
Somebody's got a 1-4, so the rest of us can 3-2. Yeah. You're doing everyone a service.
Doing God's work out here.
And we'll hopefully have more to say about Teferi when we've had a little more chances to get some testing in with that. But let's sort of take a rain check on that and transition to the new brews for today. So, David, you have some interesting lists here that are built around another War of the Spark card that I think looks totally sweet. This is the card Dreadhorde Arcanist, or Arcanist. You want to tell us about what that card does?
Sure. It's a 1 and a red for a 1/3 zombie wizard, both somewhat relevant tribes in Modern. It has Trample. And whenever it attacks, you may cast target instant or sorcery card with converted mana cost that is less than or equal to its power from your graveyard without paying its mana cost. And if you cast that card in this way, then it is exiled from the game on resolution. So it sort of functions each turn as a Snapcaster when it attacks, as long as the spell you're trying to flash back has a casting cost that's 1 or less if you don't pump the Dreadhorde Arcanist power.
There's one clause in here we actually should probably emphasize. The without paying its mana cost. And yes. Snapcaster makes you pay for it. Dreadhorde Arcanist does not. And that's actually pretty busted, I think. But anyway, back to what you're saying.
No, I think that's a key difference. And I mean, I would go even further and say that the Snapcaster comparison is a little bit misleading. Like it's more like a Dark Confidant that generates mana while generating cards.
Like, yeah, exactly. So one of the lists I built was literally using it sort of as a de facto Dark Confidant. Exactly. I think to make it good, it has to be as good as Dark Confidant, which sees some modern play, maybe a little bit more recently, I've noticed online. You know, if it's flashing back a Serum Visions, that's much better than Dark Confidant's ability, obviously. The three toughness doesn't really matter. I think most damage-based spells do three. I mean, we're talking about Lightning Bolts. I don't think the one toughness... I mean, there's, the Phyrexian one damage spell. I don't think that the three toughness matters all that much. So it functionally has to be better than a Dark Confidant, I think, to make it worth your while to play. It is my understanding that some lists in Legacy have been playing this card. Damon, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Dreadhorde Arcanist seems to slot super, super well into Legacy Delver lists. And Legacy Delver lists, this is a modern format stream, tell you a bit more about them. They feature the card Delver of Secrets, which is actually modern legal. Just haven't quite seen the right home in it. And then like a bunch of Dazes, Brainstorms, Ponders, Thoughts, Uses, Bolts. And then a pretty lean mana base around 18 to 19 lands. And the card basically just comes down for two, and the strongest openings I've seen are you go turn one Thoughtseize, take away your Swords to Plowshares or whatever, turn two Arcanist, and then you can like daze whatever the answer they have, and then turn three you attack and you buy back your Thoughtseize them again, and then the game is just kind of over from that point. You've come out so far ahead. From there you just kind of start recycling all your cantrips. I saw these lands where like they were using it, they like Pyroblast is a Jace against a control deck, and then the game went long, and Arcanist could just recast the Pyroblast on another Jace, and it just somehow, every time I saw the card, it was just doing something insane. It's not very fast. It only has one power, but if you go the lean cantrip route, it really delivers a lot of value. Whether that shell is going to translate to modern in a clean way is unclear, but just that kind of overall way to use a card is certainly powerful.
Yeah, and like you say, you know, Delver's a card that sees a lot of play in Legacy, and maybe the support package for it is not there in Modern, so just because a card is powerful in Legacy doesn't necessarily mean it will translate to Modern.
So out of curiosity, Damon, what card did the Arcanist replace? Because I think Grixis Delver has been a deck before in Legacy, right? But what was in that slot before they started adopting four of the Dreadhorde Arcanist?
I think that you can trim like a Gurmag Angler or two, maybe trim like a Young Pyromancer or two, maybe trim a True Name, kind of somewhere in along those lines. The other kind of creatures.
Okay, but it wasn't like a Snapcaster Mage, right? There's no equivalence there, right? Like Snapcaster was just not a two mana play, and this Arcanist is.
Right, right. Yeah, Grixis Delver usually wants to be able to function pretty well on two lands. The highest card in the curve is a True Name at three. For all you modern people, you should be happy you don't know what that card does if you don't already know. It's kind of a ridiculous magic card. By the way, one thing I should mention, just that I still actually really haven't figured it out. Do you guys know what the card Haze of Rage does? Not Rays of Hage, but Haze of Rage.
I do not know what the card does.
So it's some kind of storm card, right?
Yeah, so it showed up in the third place list from the most recent Legacy Challenge as a one of in a blue-red Delver list playing four Dreadhorde Arcanists. And I still want to figure out how this works exactly. It's one and a red for a sorcery, buyback two. Creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn, and then a storm. So I guess you can like cast this. So maybe if you like cast a cantrip and then this card, then it gives you guys like +2/+0, and then you flash it back with Arcanist. It's not flashback, but I don't know a better way to say it. And then it is going to trigger for three times and give you guys +3/+0. So I guess A is it really doubles the counting with Arcanist to give a good clock, and B is it pumps your Arcanist power so that Arcanist can potentially cast spells of power cost more than one.
Oh my goodness. So Haze of Rage is from Future Sight. I'm looking this up right now. So this is modern legal. Like this is an effect that is granted to all of your creatures, right? Creatures you control. So is that like why it's being played in Legacy is because you're attacking with several creatures at once? Because if it's just a matter of pumping the Arcanist alone, you can do that with just any pump spell. So like, what makes the Haze of Rage attractive to the Legacy
deck?
That
actually sounds interesting with Young Pyromancer, which also pays you off for casting a lot of spells.
Exactly. This list plays three Young Pyromancers. Oh. And maybe you know, one in every 10 games it goes long and you buy back it to get repeated value with Pyromancer.
That's some spicy tech right there.
That kind of leads into my first list, because the list I'm proposing has four Young Pyromancer in it, and I did not know this card existed, so perhaps that needs to be a one of in here, as a possible sweet target to you know, get your overrun effect to win the game.
Yeah, tell us about this first list you have drawn up for us here, because this, I think, as I'm looking at it, it reminds me of a lot of the lines that Damon was just describing that Legacy Grixis Delver can do.
Yeah, so not knowing that that was a list, it was kind of encouraging to hear that they were kind of using the same sort of structure that I kind of built my list around. I started with the sort of 7-discard package that you see in Jund list or Mardu, Pyromancer, the 4 Inquisition, 3 Thoughtseize. The thought there is just like Damon saying, you want your 2-drop to survive, leads into it perfectly. Because this list does not have any ways to pump Dreadhorde Arcanist's power, with one exception, you do want a lot of 1-drops. So you're always paying off, hopefully, when you attack. So the 7 disruption spells, hand disruption spells, 8 cantrips, 4 Serum Visions, and 4 Thought Scour. Thought Scour is really important, I think, in lists with Dreadhorde Arcanist, because it can cast Thought Scour. And Thoughtscar also fills your graveyard up with other options if you need to do something more than just draw another card. 4 Lightning Bolt, I mean, the card's just great. It's a little more proactive than a card like Fatal Push, so even if they don't have any creatures in play, Dreadhorde Arcanist can still cast it for value. You can go to the face. 2 Fatal Push, because that card is useful against creatures that survive, Lightning Bolt, specifically Tarmogoyf. 1 Claim to Fame, that's a little speculative. Maybe that's where you could put in this Haze Rage. Rage of Haze that Damon's talking about. A Surgical Extraction, just because graveyard decks are so popular, and again, Dreadhorde Arcanist can buy it back, so you can get a little more value out of it. Then the 2-drops are just all trying to take advantage of all these spells you're hoping to cast. So 4 Dreadhorde Arcanist, 4 Young Pyromancer, 3 Snapcaster Mage, and then kind of to round out your long-term plan, 2 Culligan's Command, and 2 Bedlam Reveler. Bedlam Reveler is a little speculative. I don't know how many cards from your graveyard you're going to remove. I guess my hope was with Thoughtscour, you're going to have enough that Bedlam Reveler won't be stuck in your hand all the time, but that's something that you'd have to kind of play out with actual games.
Yeah, that's a good point, because as I'm looking at or listening to you tick off these spells, I'm like, yeah, you're describing Mardu Pyromancer, like a lot of the early sequencing, even to the point of having 4 Pyromancers, but like that deck was very reliant on Bedlam Reveler to sort of pull ahead. You would play the full 4 Revelers and actually ended up being kind of weak to like a Rest in Peace in games 2 and 3, because if you can't cast Reveler, you're just not going to get your card advantage. So, yeah, I guess I hadn't really computed it until you described it just now, that you might not have the fuel you need for Reveler, even though you have all the necessary instants and sorceries that would normally support it. So the theory here is that the Arcanist is going to do the heavy lifting in terms of pulling you ahead on cards, and that you're mostly just trying to trade one for one apart from that.
Well, and the other thing is, so you sort of have 8 copies that kind of do that. Young Pyromancer is another card that can take over the game if it's unanswered. You know, if you can get 2 or 3 tokens out of it, you know, when they finally Fatal Push it or something, you know, you've gotten a lot of value there. So the thought is you kind of protect one of your value 2-drops, and then you kind of ride that to victory. Obviously, if you can go hand removal spell into Dreadhorde Arcanist, into Young Pyromancer, then cast functionally 2 or 3 spells that turn. I mean, that's the dream opening, but
I think that's actually a nice sequence, because I think back when Mardu Pyromancer was still a popular deck, you know, the conventional wisdom was you don't really want to run the Pyromancer out there on turn 2 unless you're very sure that they're not going to kill it on your turn, because you do need it to generate some tokens, so you wait until turn 3 at least so that you're definitely getting something out of it. So in that sense, Young Pyromancer was kind of like Snapcaster Mage and not really being a 2-drop most of the time. Whereas Arcanist, as we talked about, like just is a 2-drop. That's the card you want on turn 2. And it just happens to lead that great sequence of Arcanist into Pyromancer and still cast 2 spells. Where at that point, you know, you've cheated on spells and mana. You get double cast triggers. Like, you're doing really well at that point. I think a question that I would have as I'm looking at this is like, where does Young Pyromancer sit in the modern metagame right now? Because he was pretty bad for a while, and I'm almost, you know, my first reaction when I saw the list was like, oh, I like everything except the Pyromancer, like, has he suddenly become good again? And like, maybe he has. I mean, maybe he's actually a good solve to the sort of Karn Teferi problem that we've been outlining. I haven't seen much of him though in recent lists.
Yeah, it's interesting that I haven't seen too much Dreadhorde Arcanist in modern either. I mean, the card just came out, but still, it's been a little while. I agree. This is not clear to me. The 4 Young Pyromancer, like all the creatures in this deck, cost at least 2 mana, and all your spells cost 1 mana. So I wonder if there's room for cutting a couple Pyromancers or Snapcasters in particular for maybe like either Dark Confidant or even Delver of Secrets.
So I don't want to play Delver of Secrets. that much I feel confident in.
The one thing that I like about Young Pyromancer is I think, yeah, like we were saying, we're seeing these two or these three and four mana Planeswalkers all over Modern. And Young Pyromancer on turn three is just a really clean way to put pressure on Teferi. Like bouncing Young Pyromancer when you get a token back, as I explained with the Rabble Master, is just really, really good. And as long as you have some pressure on Karn, effectiveness is really limited. So I don't know that it's good again. I just from the games I was playing, if someone had played Young Pyromancer against me and cast Lightning Bolt or whatever, Opt and gotten a token, it's just weirdly good against Teferi, and it's reasonably good against Karn, since Karn comes down and does not defend itself with either of its abilities.
Yeah, I think maybe his time has come again. I mean, I think Humans has been on the rise, and that was one of the best cards against Humans. So I think this might be a nice time to revisit young PZ, and this could be a good shell to do that in. The presence of blue is a question mark for me. Damon, you suggested, you know, maybe Delver of Secrets, and I just don't think that card will ever be good in Modern, like without the ability to flip it more comfortably. It just like doesn't do enough for like the deck space that it takes up. But the card that you were identifying, Dave, as like the kind of the key contribution from blue was actually Thought Scour, maybe to a lesser extent Serum Visions, and then we just have Snapcasters just because. So how important is the blue? Like, I imagine that when we actually build this out with like the proper shocks and fetches, you'll find that having blue costs you, I don't know, 6 life a game or something like that. Like it creates vulnerabilities. You're weak to Blood Moon. Are you actually getting something besides cantrips that you couldn't already get from discard and removal, like from just having, you know, your black supplemented by your red?
I feel like you could maybe build like a super kind of like black red aggro deck, but I think that to really grind with Arcanist, you want to have those cantrips in your graveyard. If you're missing them, then you just sort of can't get super far ahead. You know, there'd be games where you have like three lands and a bunch of interaction, and you interact with them as much as you can, and then they're just kind of drawing lands and playing them and playing off the top of their deck. And if your Arcanist is sitting there attacking for one, but you can't make use of your discard spells, then you'll be really missing the cantrips.
Yeah, I mean, my head's exactly where Damon's is, and I mean, I have not played against a single aggro deck online in like 17 matches or something. So, you know, if people want to fart around with 3 and 4 mana Planeswalkers, that's awesome, because I'm going to do 8 damage to myself and just have perfect mana. So until I get punished for that appropriately, I want to be able to proactively use Arcanist to keep finding threats. I also think it makes your sideboard way better to have cantrips like this. You know, I think sideboards are really important in Modern. That's why a lot of the decks that we propose often have ways to tutor sideboards or tutor for cards that you bring in from board. And obviously there's no tutor effects in here, but being able to Serum Visions or Thought Scour to fill your graveyard and sort of find specific spells with Arcanist, I think is very valuable.
Yeah, those are good points.
One question I have is, could the deck play either a couple of Gurmag Anglers, maybe instead of the Revelers? I think they're just good with this plan. Just a solid card all around. And then the other question is, you know, Dan said, oh, we might take 6 damage from our Shocklands. And there's a Grixis deck that loves to take 6 damage from their Shocklands, and that's a Shadow deck. I know people have been trying Arcanist in a Shadow build in Legacy. I don't know how well they were doing with it. But Grixis Death Shadow does play a lot of one-mana spells. It's really a powerful deck.
I'm also intrigued by sort of converting this to more of a Death Shadow shell, as you're describing, Damon.
I did think about that. One, I think that the sort of Hive Mind will find the list, and if Arcanist is that card, it'll be found or not. But one thing that kind of I thought was concerning was that they want to play that one blue counterspell that is like a hard negate for a blue if you have a creature with 4 power or greater. And we don't have
Stubborn Denial.
We don't have creatures with 4 power in this list. So, and it's not a card you can sort of flashback for value. Again, it's not flashback, but trigger with your Dreadhorde. So, I mean, there are some tensions there that would need to be resolved. I'm not saying it's wrong or right, but yeah, I mean, it'd be an interesting direction to take it.
So, one thing I like about Shadow as a concept is that it knows it doesn't want the game to go that long, whereas I think the list that we've got in front of us here is not really sure when it wants to end the game. Like, we kind of want the opponent to just sort of give up after we've gotten four cantrips up on them or something, but we're not dealing them 20 damage anytime soon. And I think part of it, as you're saying, there's no way to actually pump the Arcanist power, so it's just chipping in for one and just pulling you ahead on cards and mana. I don't want to forget the mana. But the actual like victory will come from Young Pyromancer, and those tokens take a long time to win. So moving to something like a Shadow or a Gourmet Angler, like you at least know that you're going to close it out. You're not just trying to answer everything they do in their deck with our somewhat limited suite of discard and lightning bolt.
Yeah, I kind of that brings to mind exactly what I was thinking, Dan, that this deck basically wants to win at the speed of a mid-range deck. It can't win super fast, but all of your spells cost one mana, which means that your opponents are going to be playing just sort of bigger spells than you are by the time you get to the mid-game. And Death Shadow is just one of the most, and Gourmet Angler also, are some of the best kind of big creatures for really cheap that can fit into a shell with very few lands.
Yeah, so that might be something that we want to test. I think actually the sort of value Arcanist to Shadow Arcanist conversion is fairly simple. You maybe just cut the Pyromancers to add Death Shadows and cut the Bedlam Revelers for some street wraiths, and you're pretty much there. So we could try both versions if we are finding that we're running into that problem. But I noticed that, Dave, you gave us a second list here that is a little bit quicker in terms of like dealing them 20. Do we want to move to that one?
Yeah, so you guys are wanting to end the game quickly. We've got something for you. One of the things I often think about when I'm trying to come up with a new list is like what mechanics we can use that work well with a new card that I think are fundamentally broken. So like I thought Ancient Syrinx is like one of the more powerful cards in Modern, so that's why I was like, why don't we use that with Liquidnil, Coating, and Karn? It didn't work, but still, at least you start with one of the more powerful cards in Modern. These are not the most powerful cards in Modern, but they are using the most powerful mechanic because other cards with this ability have been banned, and that is sort of combining Delve with Phyrexian mana. So Mutagenic Growth serves multiple functions. It buffs your Dreadhorde, and it fills up your graveyard for Become Immense, which buffs your Dreadhorde, which actually gives it enough power to cast even the full casting cost for Become Immense. And if you're casting all these spells and trying to fill up your graveyard, you might as well play 4 Arclight Phoenix, because I heard that card is pretty good. So you kind of start with the basic shell of sort of like the mono red Phoenix list, like some people play. So 4 Faithless Looting, 4 Monastery Swift Spear, 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Metamorphose, 4 Arclight Phoenix. And instead of playing some of the, a little more speculative cards there, we kind of double down on our like sort of combo victory. So 4 Mutagenic Growth, 4 Serum Visions, 4 Thought Scour again. That card is great with Delve. 3 Become Immense, and then I just have a Teemer Battle Rage in there for value.
This deck looks really interesting. I mean, I certainly think that the core concept is quite strong. I know there's like a deck that was like Blister Coil, weird prowess deck that kind of made some waves recently in Modern. I don't think it went too far. But certainly Mono Red Phoenix has been hanging around as a very good deck. I think Izzet Phoenix is a little bit more popular, but Mono Red Phoenix really isn't that far behind. And this deck tries to channel a lot of what that deck has going for it. It does concern me slightly that Dreadhorde Arcanist and Arclight Phoenix really aren't maybe best friends, in the sense that by the time the Phoenix trigger has checked for 3 spells, it's too late or it's too early for Dreadhorde Arcanist to be casting spells for you. So it can't help you get across that 3 spell barrier. But that's pretty minor, I think.
That weirdly doesn't concern me that much. I think they're both cards that just like pay you off for putting Faithless Looting and Thought Scour and a bunch of 1 mana spells in your deck, and that's probably good enough, right? The Become Immense is maybe those don't work as well with the Phoenix. I'm not sure. So this reminds me very much of what I would imagine an aggressive Death Shadow Arcanist list looks like, except that instead of using a Death Shadow package, we're using a Phoenix package. And I guess, yeah, we'd have to see in the games like whether that creates the attention or not. I think it must have been Todd Anderson had put together some kind of Arcanist Death Shadow Become Immense Swift Spear deck on the VS Live series on Star City Games. And this was right after War of the Spark had just been finished preview. So they were just using proxy cards. And it looked pretty impressive, actually. The coolest plays, of course, being Become Immense on Arcanist and then flash it back for just massive damage. So
and the card randomly has trample even though it has 1 power. So just pumping its power like that is, it's all going to get through.
Yeah, what an interesting line of text, because I think that during spoiler season or preview season, whatever they're calling it now, preview season, I think a lot of people, you know, saw that and were thinking of pump spells and like, well, yeah, the card is telling me to increase its power, and then I'll really get paid off. It's got like this flashback mechanic that lets you double up on your pump spells, and I thought that was a trap. Like as I was seeing people, you know, discuss lines you could do with that, I thought like, why would you want to do that? Like if I just want to deal damage to them, like a Tarmogoyf is a much cleaner way to get a large creature. So why am I going to like open myself up to the vulnerabilities by having like a one power creature that I want to pump up? Whereas, you know, I could just play a Tarmogoyf, it would come down as a 4 or 5 power creature, and I'll attack twice with that. I'll do the same amount of damage. But maybe I was wrong about that. I mean, maybe Become Immense is just like so much more damage, and maybe the complementary attackers of Swift Spear and Soulscar Mage are like also happy to like see you casting these pump spells. Like in that respect, like the cards that seem like they don't fit as much are again the blue cards here, because those are not really attacking cards. They're just sort of support cantrips, the Thought Scour and the Seer Visions.
Yeah, I mean, I think Thought Scour, for some reason, when people started making the blue-red Phoenix list, they weren't playing four of them. I never understood that. But, you know, that card is just great, both with Delve. You know, it's sort of a dark ritual towards Delve, if you will. It also can fill your graveyard with Arclight Phoenixes. So it sort of serves a dual purpose. It also generates a bunch of fuel, possibly, for your Arcanist. Serum Visions, I mean, it's just the best one-mana cantrip we're allowed to play in Modern that isn't Ancient Syrinx. So, I don't know. It seems reasonable to play. I would hear an argument that Serum Visions isn't good, but Thought Scour seems amazing in this deck to me.
Yeah, I think another problem that I'm going to be on the lookout for when we test this is Mana Morphos, which is a card that you kind of have to include when you're playing Arclight Phoenix because it's broken and, you know, maybe shouldn't be Modern legal, but whatever. Mana Morphos exists, so put it with your Phoenixes. When you cast that card in this deck, like, what colors are you going to name? Like, you have color requirements across all three of your colors. Is that, well, I guess Mutagenic Growth, you don't need to worry about that so much. It's a little bit awkward to sort of know what to call for the Mana Morphos. I think I've seen versions of Arcanist decks where instead of using that, you know, they were using Atarka's Command. And I know those are totally different cards, but like Atarka's Command in the sense that like, that's also going to like massively increase your damage output, and it's just a little bit cleaner. Right? It's kind of like a Haze of Rage or whatever. And so, like, I would think that if the Mana Morphos itself becomes a little bit of a problem, then, I mean, that's a card you can't flashback with Arcanist. It doesn't really work with the Arcanist in any meaningful way. It's just there to support Phoenix. Like, maybe we should be considering whether we have, like, a little bit too much tension in the deck and, like, sort of how we're assembling attackers.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Phoenixes are they do make the deck actually also weirdly susceptible to Rest in Peace, because it shuts off your Arcanist, it shuts off your Phoenixes, and your Become Immense. And so I do wonder if you could just kind of create a value like rug list, maybe with like, I don't know, I've never really loved the card, but Kiln Fiend, or just something that works just more independently than Arcanist, or more in synergistically with Arcanist, and doesn't kind of pull you in the Serum Visions Mana Morphos direction.
Let's not call that a value list, because that you're still trying to get them dead.
One that is flying in the graveyard as much is what he's saying, though.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's value compared to the original list, because now you have Dreadhorde Arcanist, who just gets you value, relatively.
I'd go with Soulscar Mages before I dipped back into the Kiln Fiend. Well, I've been down that road too many times, and he's never done what I wanted him to. Soulscar Mage, at least, you know, has started to prove himself in Modern somewhat. But, I mean, yeah, I can see that. I can see that deck doing a thing. So, again, my instinct would be, like, if we're going to be like committing ourselves to playing three colors, why not just play four? Let's throw the Death Shadows in and just see what happens. So yeah, I think that would have to be at the expense of the Arclight Phoenix, though. The wizard subtype on the Arcanist, I keep wanting that to be meaningful, but it weirdly doesn't really work with any wizard cards, right? Like the only ones that pay you off for having wizards are Wizard Lightning, which doesn't work with the Arcanist for some reason, because it's still CMC3, and the Delver, as we talked about, tends to be a trap. I have played against some people in the leagues who are trying to make that work. I've faced like a Teemer Wizards list with Delver and Soulscar and Arcanist. There, I mean, the Atarka's Commands were impressive, but the Delvers were not. And there actually wasn't any wizard synergy. I kept expecting something to happen that was like paying him off for having wizards, and it just never happened.
I actually think Adelise is really good with Arcanist, but I think that's more of a standard power level. I just don't think Adelise, unfortunately, is a Modern level card.
So remind us what Adelise does.
Adelise is one red and a blue for a 2/2 flying haste wizard with prowess. Or no, that's not what she doesn't have, prowess. I'm sorry. Her text reads, whenever you cast a non creature spell, or is it instant or sorcery, all your wizards get +1/+1. So maybe if you were playing Mutagenic Girl, she's good enough. That's kind of interesting.
So the sequence there is you have your Arcanist on 2, your Adelise on 3.
Yes.
Then you Mutagenic Growth targeting, the Arcanist? You get a trigger from the Adelise, so now you're up to, a 3/3 and a 4 power. Then you recast the Growth for another 4 power total. That's not bad.
Yeah, it could kind of be your, curve topper, maybe 2 Adelises in the deck. It's whenever you cast an instant or sorcery. So unfortunately, you can't trigger it. You know, when you go have a Karn fetch your Mycosynth Lattice, the lattice itself won't trigger your Adelise, which is one direction we could go with this deck from what I've been seeing.
Yeah, just three Karns on the top and just take 3 or 4 sideboard slots and we should be good to go.
Yeah, our mana base supports casting Karn, so why not?
I think if you're doing a Spells Matter, there's just a bunch of cards you can choose, and it's kind of just picking the one. Like, you want to play, a Kiln Fiend-like list, which you see often paired with Swift Spear or other cards with Prowess, where you're kind of getting, a value, and then you're going to want to play some amount of, Teener Battle Rage type effects to try to get them dead quickly. You can play, Young Pyromancer and go wide, so every time you cast all these spells, you can get a bunch of 1/1s. And maybe if you're playing a Tarkus Command, that becomes more attractive, because it's kind of a universal pump. There's that wizard synergy. I don't think there's quite enough there in modern to pay it off, but I want Adelise to be good, so I'm willing to incinerate some tickets trying to figure that one out. Or Arclight Phoenix in a very specific shell also pays you for casting a bunch of instant sorceries. So yeah, it's going to kind of be the tension of Dreadhorde Arcanist is going to help you cast certain amounts of spells at certain times, and how can you kind of best use that?
Yeah, and actually, let's do a quick calculation here. If you go turn 1 Swift Spear, turn 2 Arcanist, turn 3 Atarka's Command, and you'd probably pick the modes, deal 3 damage to each opponent, creatures you control get +1/+1 and reach, and then you use your Arcanist to flash it back. How much damage does that come out to? 6 damage off the Atarka's Command, and then I guess all you guys are getting +2/+2, so that's another 4, so that's 10 damage, and then 2 more off the Prowess triggers.
And then 2
so
from the
another, yeah, so we're talking about turn 3, not quite lights out, but pretty close with 3 cards.
Yeah, that actually sounds
Command is interesting.
Yeah, I'm starting to buy what you're selling there.
Yeah, that's three cards only. That's Neoform Stranglerwort Geist territory for damage output. My goodness.
Yeah.
We cracked the top tier of Modern.
And then you wouldn't have to play Faithless Looting anymore if you weren't playing Arclight Phoenix, because I do think that card is, even though people want to get it banned, it really only works if you're really getting paid off for having stuff in your graveyard.
Yeah, and also we don't have the thing in the ice to take advantage of a lot of the Phoenix Shell, which is the other good payoff.
Yes.
For all the spells. Because Mono Red Phoenix has just this critical mass of burn spells that this deck is missing that give it an alternative approach, and that just...
I think that's a great question, whether you would still want Faithless Looting without a Phoenix. It helps you with everything you're trying to do, right? You're trying to put cards in the graveyard. You're trying to cast 1-mana instants and sorceries. But at the same time, it gives you prowess triggers. But then again, Mishra's Bubble does most of that as well. That's proven itself in this style of shell. So maybe you don't need 4 lootings. Maybe it's just sort of a supplemental piece. If you have room, you could throw in a couple. I mean, it turns out it helps to become immense if you're not drawing your Thoughtscour in a timely fashion or something like that.
Yeah, I think you guys are kind of describing a shell that I'm liking a little more, where you get rid of 4 Metamorphos, 4 Arclight Phoenix, you add 2 Soulscar Mage and maybe 1 or 2 Adelise, and then you cut down to 1 Become Immense, but you add 4 Tarkus Command.
Keep a couple more Become Immense. Why not? It's one of your most dangerous lines.
Why not Become Immense? Consider converting the Thoughtscours over into a different cantrip, potentially. The card is actually a pretty bad cantrip as far as those go.
We're at risk of running out of cards to flash back with the Arcanist if we don't have Faithless Looting or Thoughtscour anymore.
Well, I would replace it with a different cantrip, or maybe just burn, honestly.
Well, yeah, but those don't fill the graveyard with more fuel, right?
They don't need to.
Oh, because the game was going to end, is what you're saying.
But if you cast an opt, the opt is the fuel, right?
Yeah, okay. Fair enough, fair enough.
I'm liking a Tarkus command in this shell. I don't know that I... Once I play and you ditch Manamorphose and Arclight Phoenix, then I also like getting rid of Faithless Looting. So you start to have a lot of slots you can play around with.
So, I mean, the Tarkus command does pay you for going wide, which the Young Pyromancer plan that we were talking about in the last show does much more effectively than anything we're describing here, but maybe that's just getting too cute. So, okay, so the two lists that we've been sketching out, I think they both look playable out of the box. I expect them to do well, or to acquit themselves well. Maybe they're not quite tuned yet, but can I propose some weirder things and just get your quick reactions on them? So these are both responsible uses of the Dreadhorde Arcanist. Neither of these lists have the card Ancestral Visions.
I thought about that. I thought about a Faithless Looting Ancestral Vision shell, or with like Is It Charm.
And what did you conclude when you were...
I'm in for it. I think you really have to sequence your draws perfectly then, because if you're trying to just value Arcanist, I think you really have to play discard spells. So you need those seven discard spells to like make sure that your two drop doesn't just die all the time. And so then you need to have like specific like removal spell into your two drop, into a Faithless Looting, into Ancestral Vision, which isn't unreasonable. I mean, I'm here for it.
So the line is basically we just want to get our Ancestral Vision into the graveyard somehow and then cast it with Arcanist.
Yes, sir.
So do we even need to be playing blue? Is one question I have.
No, I say looting? No.
Or possibly even self-discard. Somehow, like, I guess you don't come out that far ahead if you discard your own Ancestral Vision. But you do come out a little bit ahead. Weirdly
Isn't
enough.
That what it's all about?
That's like that turn one island, Ancestral Recall, draw three, go to discard. I'm ahead. I'm a little bit ahead. So, I mean, if we were going to try to build that deck, which maybe there's no good reason to, I think you probably have to play Bloodbraid Elf just to, like, have another way to cast our Ancestral Vision. And at that point, you're going slower or higher on the curve. You're not in the same space as these really, really sleek decks we were talking about that are full of one-mana plays. And maybe that's just not worth it.
Yeah, well, how does BB... I mean, in Legacy, you use Shardless Agent with Brainstorm to reliably cascade into your Ancestral Vision. If you just toss Bloodbraid Elves in here, how do you ensure they hit your visions?
Yeah, you're going to hit like Faithless Looting a reasonable amount of time, and it's like, oh, this was a sweet 4-mana 3-2 haste that probably can't even attack profitably.
Well, now you've cast the looting and you've got the visions in the graveyard.
Exactly.
You'll get your cards one way.
Does the new card Finale of Promise work with Ancestral Visions? You may cast up to one instant or sorcery.
It does.
Converted mana cost X or less.
It does.
So you can get some redundancy on your Arcanist package with that card, which is interesting.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good thought. I kind of forgot about that card there, but you could put that in the shell. So it's a little silly. I'm still thinking this more in the silly camp, but it's something you could do with the Arcanist. I don't want to derail us too much.
I mean, I think the problem is you draw three and then like your hand is full of a bunch of ways to put another Ancestral Visions in your graveyard to draw three.
Well, you're going to go infinite at that point.
Yeah, I mean, so you just die with like 12 cards in your hand. You try to explain to your opponent that they should have thrown down when you quote unquote went up so many cards.
He died as he lived with a handful of cards.
Yeah. I mean, okay. A silly list by Dan. I sometimes I want to take those pretty seriously.
If we're talking about casting Ancestral Vision, you have my attention and possibly my curiosity. I mean, I think the Ancestral Vision is really sweet. People kept saying, oh, they shouldn't, you know, unban it in Modern. All this stuff is going to happen, and no one's done it yet, so.
Okay, I have two more silly lists. That one was, the Ancestral Vision was the least silly of the three. So, okay, two more, just quickly. So, you mentioned Haze of Rage, Damon, which has the Storm mechanic. And in Legacy, you also occasionally come across Niv-Magus Elemental being used in kind of a silly list with Flusterstorm, which appears to be in Modern Horizons. So Flusterstorm will be a card we can play now. Ground Rift is the other one mana Storm card. And these things all create a ton of copies of just like a mostly meaningless spell that the Niv-Magus Elemental can then eat. And hearing you describe Arcanist doing the same thing with Haze of Rage, I'm like, well, you could, I mean, those cards are modern legal. You could put a deck together that tried to do that. Is there anything there worth even entertaining? Like a Niv-Magus, Dreadhorde, Arcanist, attacking package backed up by these storm spells.
Are the storm spells instant speed?
Oh, no. I mean, Fluster Storm, of course, but not the other two. Ground Rift is a sorcery, and what is Haze of Rage an instant or a sorcery?
Sorcery.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, that list was never good, but...
In Legacy, Niv-Magus Elemental actually see some play in Blue-White Delverblade lists that run for Fluster Storm. One benefit of that list is that Flusterstorm is actually like a pretty good card in Legacy to be main decking. It's maybe not traditional, normally you run Spell Pierce, but it's defensible. And then
Damon, can you tell everybody what Flusterstorm does? Some people probably aren't that used to this card because it.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a. It takes a little while to get comfortable with it, and it's coming to Modern soon. It reads one blue instant, counter target instant or sorcery unless the controller pays one. So it's like Daze. Or Force Spike, but then in a storm. And so if your opponent, like the default mode is your opponent casts an instant, and if you Fluster Storm it, now you have two copies of these, say they have to pay one, which makes it by default as good as Spell Pierce for countering instants or sorceries. Of course, it can't hit enchantments or planeswalkers is one downside. And actually slightly better in the sense that they can't cleanly counter your Fluster Storm because it lives as two copies. And then there's side benefits, like if your opponent is tapped out and you have Niv-Magus Elemental, you can use Niv-Magus Elemental to exile the copy on the stack, the extra one, to make Niv-Magus Elemental bigger. And then you get some extra value from it. And then if there's a bigger stack, then Fluster Storm just gets a little bit... You basically have to think through it every time. I can't give you any like general rules of guidelines.
Yeah, so if we're not trying to abuse it somehow, it's basically a Spell Pierce for Modern. Like if you just had a Fluster Storm in your deck.
Well, it's better against spells, but it's much worse against planeswalkers, right? I mean.
Oh, sorry. See, I'm not used to the card yet. Okay, so it's not a spell.
Right.
It's only right. Used as a sorcery. Okay. That's
key. So that's why in Legacy, you typically sideboard Fluster Storm versus main decking it. The main deck, usually you only main deck it if you're playing Niv-Magus Elemental or you're like really sure you only care about instants or sorceries and you just don't care about Aether Vials or anything like that.
And now correct me if I'm wrong, but if we had this deck put together, if you had a Fluster Storm in your graveyard and an Arcanist in play, you attack with the Arcanist, you target the Fluster Storm, there's no actual way to do that, right? Like there's no way to have that ability resolve with something else on the stack for the Fluster Storm to counter? Or is there some mechanism that I'm not thinking of?
Two Dreadhorde Arcanists, couldn't you?
I mean, they'd have to resolve one at a time. I think it just doesn't work with counter spells.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Okay, well, maybe that's not worth pursuing in too great detail right now, but it crossed my mind as we were discussing Haze of Rage. Okay, one more silly idea to throw at you guys. This one comes to us straight from Standard. It's actually a two-pronged idea. So in Standard, Dreadhorde Arcanist is a card that you will sometimes find. I think when War of the Spark was previewed, people were saying, well, hey, there's actually two cards. There's Dreadhorde Butcher and Dreadhorde Arcanist that both reward you for having the sequence of pump spell followed by thud. Thud being, you know, one mana fling, right? Sorcery, sacrifice a creature, it deals damage equal to its power to any target. So it just so happens that if you start with either a Dreadhorde Arcanist or a Dreadhorde Butcher, which is a card that let's not get into that right now. It's it does a lot of damage to it, and then when it dies, it does damage equal to its power. A sequence of those three in a row will deal close to 20 damage. Arcanist followed by Pump Spell followed by Thud. And in Modern you could do that too. I mean you wouldn't have to play Collision Colossus or whatever it is that they're talking about in Standard. You could, I mean you could, yeah, it's basically the same as the Become a Mass Team or Battle Rage. But you could actually, as I'm describing this just sounds like a worse version of what David has already proposed with the Become Immense Battle Rage shell. So I'm going to erase that discussion. Second idea is Feather the Redeemed. So the other interaction you'll find in Standard is that the Dreadhorde Arcanist like has a weird interaction with Feather the Redeemed, where if you cast a spell from your graveyard using the Arcanist and it is like Feather eligible, meaning it targets one of your own creatures, the spell doesn't get exiled. It actually goes back to your hand. So you kind of never run out of gas that way. In Standard, in order to make that deck work, right, this is sometimes called the Boros Feather deck in Standard, you have to play these kind of bad cantrips that target your own creatures, like Defiant Strike. You know, one mana, your creature gets +1/+0 when you draw a card. In Modern, you have slightly more intriguing options that target your own creatures. I think the best one, I believe, is Dromoka's Command. So you'd end up being in the Naya colors. But yeah, we also have the Pump Spells, Mutagenic Growth, Become Immense. So is there anything in that sort of package that that interests you guys?
It seems tricky in the sense that a Naya shell that needs white, white, red. Like that first off is actually a pretty tricky mana base to reliably assemble. And secondly, like the Become Immense synergy, Become Immense costs 5 and a green, and you can delve to make it cheaper, but can you delve to make it cheaper twice?
No, that you probably can't do. So I guess I'd be more interested in the Dromoka's Command or the Mutagenic Growth.
I'm just not sold on Feather as like a modern powered card. I know it survives Bolt, so people always get their hopes up, but it's not clear to me it's like better than Nuklevy.
Whoa.
What? Where did that comparison come from? I mean,
that's another three mana card with like a four toughness, so people are like, oh, it's Rise Bolt. I talk myself into playing it. And
now you've got Damon's attention. Damon loves Nuklevy, so
am I naming the wrong card? What's
I think so.
For that Knuckleblade? What's the blue, red, green, 4/4? Big Nux, we always call it. Is it not?
I love Nuklevy, but it's not a competitive magic card.
Nuklevy is the 4 blue red hybrid 4/4 that gets an instant and sorcery back.
Yeah, that card is
sweet. I also love that card.
Now I want them to print a Savage Nuklevy.
Yeah, there you go.
Three mana version.
Feather is not much better than Savage Knuckleblade. It's slightly better than Nuklevy, but that's not the bar you need to clear to play modern these days.
You know, I don't think that Feather is that far off of being playable in modern. She's probably not good enough to warrant like being a build around, and maybe for that reason she's just not going to see the light of day. But I mean, I think in this deck I would think of her as like she's not the main piece. Arcanist is the main piece, but she just happens to complement some of the spells you would be using or hoping to rebuy with the Arcanist anyway.
I would actually say that her stats are not that bad. Like 3 mana for a 3/4 flyer. Like you guys love Resto. This is cheaper. It's kind of like Resto for your spells. And so 3/4 flyer means it dodges Bolt. It's at least a little bit harder to cast Push on. And then it can fly over and smack Planeswalkers. So it doesn't seem that far off of modern in that sense.
You guys are using very interesting phrasing. You're saying it's not that far off from modern, which tacitly acknowledges it is off for modern, just by not by that much. And that's my claim. It's off for modern. It's not good enough for modern.
No, I think it's more just that if I haven't seen a card reliably make top 8 lists, I don't consider that card like a modern playable card exactly. But that doesn't mean it isn't. It just means that I haven't seen it.
Sure,
and
absolutely.
So that means it is certainly worth trying.
I would like it to see it make a top 8 standard list, and then we can maybe start to consider about...
Okay, well, it's not going to first standard. I don't really follow standard results. That would be a bad sign.
Like, I don't think Dromoka's Command is that big of a payoff either. Like, this is not a card that you see more than maybe, like, one of in some green-white lists that are looking for more interaction. So getting to play more Dromoka's Command is not that big of a sales pitch to me.
Okay, how about the card Fiery Justice? Let me just make sure that actually works the way that I think it does. I believe you can target your own creatures with that. Is that right?
Yeah, all right. I mean, that is a card I could start to get on board with. Then can we play that Kavu that gets bigger?
Oh, God. Kavu Predator?
Yeah.
No, we cannot play that. But, yeah, okay, Fiery Justice does work. It says 5 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or players. Yeah, why not? I mean, throw 1 damage at your Feather. You're doing it at that point. So if I just felt like burning some ticks, I might throw this deck together. Naya, Arcanist, Feather, and just see what happens.
Sometimes I wonder, if I played a blue-white control deck against you, and I was like, you can play 1 Fiery Justice a turn for free, and no other spells. Okay, you can't ever win that game then.
not against blue-white control. But I mean, you don't see many Naya decks in modern at all, but when you do see them, they sometimes have as many as 3 or 4 Fiery Justice on the sideboard because the card is just lights out against creature decks. It's one of those cards where, you know, you have to reach across the table and take it out of your opponent's hand so that you can read it, because you can't actually believe what they're saying to you. They just like tap their lands and killed your entire board for free, and you read the card and it's like, well, that's exactly what it does. You just killed my entire team. So it's actually like a sneakily good card for modern. Just that, you know, Naya is not a combination that anyone plays. So I'm always looking on the lookout for decks that give me a reason to revisit Fiery Justice.
Well, there's one issue. It's printed before Planeswalkers were in existence, and so it does not hit Planeswalkers, which is a little bit sad.
Has that been errated, though, or is that... Are you looking at the... Which edition are you looking at? Let's...
Whatever the new Masters version is. I can double check, actually, because maybe that was before the errata or the Planeswalker change.
I don't stay up on all of my...
No. It says on the Oracle text, deals fire damage to fighters you choose among any number of targets.
Yeah, so any targets. Any targets.
There it is. Now Damon's on board.
Feathery justice.
Feathery justice. Wow. Okay.
I guess we
need to build this deck now just for that name.
We do. This deck is, of course, going to be terrible, but I am intrigued by the fact that you can board into essentially a very lopsided matchup against aggro decks. So that means if you like can dedicate the rest of your deck to not being miserable against white blue control, and I have not heard a card yet that is even taking a step in that direction, maybe you have something.
Yeah, well, so your base deck is going to be Zoo, right? So you're going to have your Wildland Kettles, which you guys were very high on, and single-handedly won some matches last week.
I am very high on Wildland Kettle.
And you'll have your Arcanist for a little bit of value. Unfortunately, you will have to play some, probably just like some pump spells, which you generally don't want against control unless you're ending the game that turn, which we probably won't be. So in exchange for a slightly awkward matchup game one against control, we have like an aggro deck that can switch into a more controlling role, because, you know, once you have Arcanist and Feather buying back defensive or removal spells, like when the matchup calls for it, you know, you're doing pretty well against creature decks. All right, that's something I need to like draw this up. I haven't actually sketched out a list yet. But yeah, thanks for hearing me out on that. I may come back with some sad tales of how I almost got there with that deck. We'll see.
I do like the fact that you get to play Domri maybe in this deck, since we're playing Naya Colors, and Domri buffs up your Arcanist so you can get two mana spells.
Oh, you've got my attention now. You have my attention now.
Like the two mana spell I actually want to cast a bunch of times whenever I play Zoo is the one that does the damage for all the land types that you have. And if we can consistently get Arcanist to buy that back and do five to the face, now I'm starting to maybe listen to what you're saying. I don't think we need to play Feather in this list. I keep on emphasizing that.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to play all the basic land types unless I was on Death Shadow, which maybe I want to be.
I love as soon as anyone starts like playing Fetch Shock lands, you guys are like, let's just put four Death Shadows in there. That should round out these nicely.
Unless we're playing lands in there, we could add some Karns.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably get to six mana at some point.
I like to remind myself that I need to kill the opponent eventually, because as you know, I'm always drawn to drawing cards and like recurring things. So I put Death Shadow as like a mental check when I'm deck building. Like, should I just be playing Death Shadow? Like, is that better than whatever silly value engine I'm trying to construct is? So that's why I keep on bringing it up, especially in the context of a Dreadhorde Arcanist. But yeah, I hear you. It may not be the right fit. Anyway, that's...
You just get a Death Shadow playmat, and whenever you're dirtling, you're like, what would Death Shadow do?
Yeah.
My goodness. Okay, so any further thoughts on Dreadhorde Arcanist? Any angles we've left unexplored?
I don't know about if Domri's the card, but I'm interested in finding playable ways to passively increase its power by one or two without having to dedicate cards to it. Like, at least you could talk yourself into Domri, you know, on three, and you get to fight another bear or something. But being able to go from one to two really opens up your options. I mean, you can buy back things like Lightning Helix in creature matchups, you know, so you're starting to be good against burn. I don't know if you want to play all the creature types to do five to their face. I mean, you just have a lot more options. Now, I don't know if there is a, like, passive way to just increase its power, but that's another angle you can take. So you don't have to do like a turbo pump option like we were discussing, and you don't have to do kind of load your deck with one mana spells, which, like Damon was saying, that does kind of limit your power levels to get into the late game. So if you can find a passive way to increase its power, I don't know what that is.
Do you want a permanent power increase or just a temporary power increase?
Whatever. I would be open to either.
Because most of the permanent ones are not going to be spells. They're going to be cards like Domri, but there are some spells like I mean, Dromoka's Command is one of the better ones that puts a counter on it. Funeral Charm is a card that I've been known to sleeve up more than I should.
Yeah, but I'm saying I want a card that, like, I'm already, without Arcanist in play, I'm reasonably happy to play.
Oh, Funeral Charm, that's always good something.
You are not yet naming cards that are meeting my criteria. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. Like, Noble Hierarch doesn't work with the Arcanist.
Nope.
Because the Exalted Trigger is just not going to resolve in time when you have to choose your target.
What about our Zendikar land Teetering Peaks?
Yeah, I thought about that. I'm. It's not a great card, but I'm willing to consider it.
Claim to Fame was actually a great find for the Fame half, that the +2/+0 in haste. So I mean, that's interesting. I know you had that in your initial sketch, Dave.
Yeah.
Maximize Velocity does a similar thing.
And gives haste.
Yeah, the tricky thing to me is more on the deck building constraint, in the sense that Dreadhorde Arcanist wants you to play spells that work with it. And at the point that you're like, okay, well, I want to be working with spells at the 2 CMC, then you need to play not only the enablers to get to 2 power, but also the 2 CMC spells that are worth flashing back. Mm. And that's just like a lot of deck building space that might not be possible, with the exception of Atarka's Command, which really is kind of the all-in-one package where it enables itself to be flashback.
Right.
And it did see play in Zoo for a while. You know, there used to be, I think right when they unbanned Wild Mikado, hilarious that card was banned, BTW, but whatever. That was like a 2 or 3 of in certain shells where they would play, like, you know, their one drops would be Goblin Guide and Wild Mikado, and so they would get 5 damage a lot of times out of their Tarkus Command. That was sort of the goal. But even getting 4 is very good for 2 mana.
Yeah, I've seen that as a 4 of in some lists.
Yeah.
And it was a 4 of in Standard, so I mean, that card definitely has proven its chops in various formats. So it's not crazy to sort of feature that as a companion to the Arcanist. But yeah, I mean, at that point, I think we're definitely just trying to get them dead. We're not trying to put cantrips on the deck or anything like that.
Yeah, so, no pussyfooting around, as Robert Fritt would say.
So yeah, I mean, then that gets me back to my initial reservation. Like, is that the point of the Arcanist? Is it to, like, pump himself? Or is that just, like, a less efficient way than doing what, like, the original Zoo deck already did? So we'll see. I mean, maybe we'll take these decks through some leagues and try to take a crack at this and see how they perform.
Yeah, sounds good. These decks look pretty sweet. I think that we'll find, I'm sure at least one of them will be promising. Possibly all of them. They look fun to play. I'm curious to see, especially a Targus Command Dreadhorde Arcanist synergy and kind of like a Zoo style deck. That's the one I'm most interested in.
Final thoughts, Dave?
I think Dreadhorde Arcanist is really sweet. It is, I think, if you build your deck correctly, a slightly better Dark Confidant, and I think that card is actually insane. I'm surprised more people haven't been experimenting with it, like Damon was talking about. Yeah, I think it has a lot of potential, and one mana spells are very common in Modern because of how fast and efficient the format is. So, yeah, a lot of space to explore there.
Yeah, I'm excited to see this in action. All right, I think that will about do it for us on this episode. So we'll be back next week with hopefully a good chunk of testing results. I know we have some unfinished business with Teferi, and we have a lot that we want to learn about Dreadhorde Arcanist. We'll see you guys then.
Peace.
All right, good night.
That'll do it for episode 5 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. If you like what you heard today, we would love to hear from you. If you feel like leaving us a review on iTunes, that would be a tremendous help, as we are a brand new podcast. You can also find us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG or on the Modern subreddit at r/ModernMagic. We have a post there for discussion of each of our episodes, including the decks that we proposed, and some bonus content with things like first impressions of Modern Horizons. Obviously, we will have a lot more to say about that set once all of the cards are spoiled and we have a chance to playtest them online. But in the meantime, we would be back next week with our testing results and some more sweet decks. So give us a follow, leave us some feedback, tell a friend, and we hope to see you next week.